Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, marking 47 years of commitment to operating the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
Hello and welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your guest host, Dr. Monique Andrews, a licensed therapist and professor of psychology here in Anchorage. Loneliness is often overlooked. However, a sense of connection is deeply rooted to our overall health and wellness. Loneliness is defined as a sense of disconnection emotionally and socially. It can also be perceived as a lack of relationship with friends and loved ones. Discussing loneliness in Alaska is a timely topic as we are moving from summer to fall and then to the long, cold winter months. When it comes to loneliness in Alaska, not only are people separated by time and distance, they're also separated by terrain. It is cold, it is dark, there's snow, there's ice, and even if you live in a small community where everyone knows your name, they may not know about your struggles. And alternately, they may be all too familiar with your struggles. And with that, it may feel like pain, and you can also feel isolated. So today, we are going to have a discussion about loneliness in Alaska. We have two guests with us today, Dr. Ziamara Owens, who is the Director of Behavioral Health Aid Training for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, or ANTHC, and Leah Van Kirk, who is the Healthcare Policy Advisor with the State Department of Health. We're going to talk about their roles and what their programs provide. And a note for our listeners, this is a pre-recorded show, so you won't be able to call in or email with your questions. But we are glad you are listening. Dr. Owens, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us how you got into this field?
Sure. Yeah, so as mentioned, my name is Dr. Ziamara Owens. I usually go by Zio. And I have been working in behavioral health for as long as I can remember. And I think the roots of my working in behavioral health started pretty early, where I was just naturally someone who in my social network, people would reach out to me whenever they were having a hard time. I really cared about people. I wanted to help them. I wanted to help people to not be in pain. And also, I've had my own experience living with depression and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so I've got my experience of learning ways to manage that over the course of my lifetime.
Thank you. Thank you. And Leah, would you introduce yourself and tell us how you have gotten into the healthcare policy?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Andrews. So my name is Leah Van Kirk, and I am a healthcare policy advisor in the commissioner's office for the Alaska Department of Health. And during my career, I have spent time within state government, within the Division of Behavioral Health, and also within Child Protection and the Department of Corrections. And so the work has been very rewarding, and being in a role where we can look at health policy and how that can impact statewide change has been really rewarding.
Yes, yes, thank you. And we know that Alaska has some of the highest rates of reported feelings of loneliness in the nation. Research shows that loneliness and isolation can contribute to negative health outcomes, and then adversely, negative health outcomes can contribute to isolation and loneliness. So today, we're going to first have a conversation with our guests about their roles and programs and how they can help combat loneliness in our state. Then we're going to explore how we can recognize loneliness in ourselves and in others. And lastly, we are going to brainstorm positive coping strategies and ways in which we can stay better connected. So first, Leah, would you share a bit about your office and your role as the healthcare policy advisor?
Sure. So I think one important component of the Alaska Department of Health is that we focus on five divisions for implementing statewide services, and that is the Division of Behavioral Health, the Division of Public Health, Senior and Disability Services, Public Assistance, and Healthcare Services. And so as you can see, that's a wide array of services that support the health, safety, and well-being of all Alaskans. And so through this work, there are many opportunities to implement the governor's Healthy Families Initiative. And then we've also identified four arcs of effort for the department, and that is actually strengthening our behavioral health system. It is transforming care, and that is including our Medicaid system and Medicaid innovation to improve health outcomes for people across the state. Child care is actually one of our arcs of effort because we know the importance of child care for working families. And then the last arc of effort focuses on preventing overdose and suicide in Alaska. So our work is really comprised within those divisions with those four arcs of effort and overarching goals.
Yes, lots of effort. Dr. Owens, would you please talk about the Behavioral Health Aid Program and the services the program provides?
Yes, absolutely. So within ANTHC, the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, we have four divisions. And the Behavioral Health Aid Program, along with the other two health aid programs, operate out of the Division of Community Health Services. And we do so in collaboration with the other divisions, of course. But the behavioral health aides themselves are often employed by regional tribal health organizations. And so at ANTHC, what we do is provide additional supports for their training and certification as it relates to the BHAs doing their work out in the regions.
Okay. And are there any particular stories or what stories are behavioral health aides hearing about loneliness from day to day?
I mean, loneliness shows itself in many different ways. Mm-hmm. And I think behavioral health aides, all of our health aid programs are really uniquely situated to be able to identify and recognize these things early on in the community. Ideally, you know, as they are developing or as people might be becoming unwell, but also as people might experience crises or be responding to critical events that might happen in the community. So BHAs, they provide a lot of services along the entire continuum of care of service, from prevention and outreach to early intervention, interventions, and also postvention.
Excellent. And I think I heard you say BHA, yes, referring to behavioral health aides. So we may refer to that throughout the show. Okay. And according to our former Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, loneliness should be viewed as an epidemic. Leah, is loneliness considered a public health issue in Alaska or more of a mental health challenge?
You know, I think instead of identifying loneliness as one or the other, what I'd like to talk about is the constructs of connectedness. And connectedness is the opposite of loneliness. And oftentimes when we talk about social isolation or isolation, that oftentimes is referring to loneliness. But within our state plans, we recognize the impact of loneliness because we see it through, for instance, some of the data around our crisis contact center, right? So we know that one of the top five reasons that people in our state contact our crisis contact center is because of loneliness. So it's really important to reflect in our statewide health plans and strategies the importance of connection, right? Connection is the protective factor that combats loneliness and some of the negative health, mental health outcomes that can result, it can be a result of that. So, you know, I'd highlight, you know, our strengthening the system comprehensive mental health integrated program plan. And you'll see, you know, in the first section, there's a focus on early childhood and youth. And one of the key areas that we call out in our strategies is the importance of children, youth, and families feeling connected to their community. You'll also see in our Healthy Alaskans state plan the importance of youth having connections with three other adults in their lives that they trust that they can go to with any problem. You'll also see the importance in actually in the Healthy Alaskans plan one of the key areas is that youth feel like they matter to their communities. And so you can see a response to what we know loneliness represents and can impact is the opposite. We see loneliness in our communities, and so when we think about statewide planning, we want to build protection around that because we know that connectedness is a protective factor. So using our statewide plans to highlight that is an important part, I think, of elevating the issue of loneliness and what's needed to help combat that.
Thank you. And I know you shared a little bit about some of the priorities, but is there any formal recognition of loneliness in current health strategy or even funding priorities?
I think the formal recognition comes in recognizing connectedness and building connectedness mm-hmm. is related to and in response to loneliness. So yes, I would say across our state plans, you'll see that highlighted. Oftentimes when we identify grant funding, we want our state entities or grantees to identify how that relates to our statewide plans and priorities.
Okay. Is there strong collaboration between the Department of Health and other agencies?
Absolutely. I feel like the department collaborates with community organizations across the state through stakeholder organizations, with the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, as well as many of our boards that are represented across our divisions. We engage regularly with our tribal health organizations and tribal partners because implementing statewide strategies to combat what we know impacts Alaskans takes Alaskans sharing and telling us what their struggles are, but also what makes a difference and what works for them.
And I see Dr. Owens shaking her head. Would you share your thoughts on recognition of loneliness in your work?
Absolutely. So similar to what Leah is describing, it really does take a lot of collaboration across a lot of different organizations and communities. And so we work really closely with tribal health organizations and our tribal partners to understand what that looks like in their communities, but also to understand what their unique health system looks like so that we can come alongside them in the efforts that they have in place. I'll leave it at that for
okay.
now.
And what support systems do behavioral health aides receive? And would you share a little?
Absolutely. So from the ANTHC perspective, and of course, we really work with behavioral health aides in getting the training that they need to provide the services that they provide and also to become certified behavioral health aides. And so BHAs have a big job. Mm-hmm. And a lot of responsibility in their role. And so it's important for us to really integrate into their training ways to help them recognize when other people are becoming unwell and how to support them, but also how to take care of themselves. And so from an ANTHC perspective, learning about self-care is a regular concept that is integrated into their training and different practices that we have them engage in as a part of their training. But also at their regional level, all health aides have a supervisor that they report to. And that supervisor does more than perhaps what a typical supervisor would do, which is really just overseeing their clinical practice. But they are also very interested in how that person is doing as an individual, noting that as they are a member of their community, when something happens in their community, they can also be affected. So their supervisor provides them with support. And then, of course, they've got their individual supports, whether that is family, whether that is their colleagues that are working with them in the clinic or even across their region. There are lots of ways that they are connected to different people and really encouraged to connect with them when they are having a hard time or when they just need that extra support.
Okay. And to both of our guests, are there ways you think policy could be better in helping people get the support they need or to increase resources in our state to combat loneliness and isolation? First, let's hear from you, Leah.
I I think one important service that comes to mind is 988 and our crisis contact center in Alaska. And the reason I say that is because it is at everyone's fingertips. You can pick up your cell phone and you can dial it, and it's free and it's confidential. And when we talk about loneliness, you'd think, why would someone call a contact center where they don't know anybody? But what we know is that sometimes we need a different type of connection or support that might be outside of the social constructs in a community to help us understand that we might not be alone in our struggle. And sometimes when we feel alone and we don't reach out, it's harder to manage those daily stressors. And so it's interesting listening to and understanding when you learn about the 988 Contact Center and the faces and the people who answer the phone, who are also people living in Alaska, that they often have people calling regularly because they trust the person on the other end of the phone. They know it's a fellow Alaskan, and it helps them feel like they're not alone. And I think that's that's one of the key pieces of loneliness that we want to combat. And so that might happen, you know, within your family. That might happen within a community setting or a faith organization or with your tribal drumming group. And it might happen talking to somebody who knows more about what you might be going through and can help you through that place of feeling alone. So I would say that's an example of a way that we can ensure services or supports are available to all Alaskans.
You know, what I have found is that behavioral health is one of those topics. So behavioral health / loneliness, right? It's a topic that comes up in lots of different avenues, and it doesn't always show up in the same way. And so I think anything that we can do that helps to reduce the stigma related to behavioral health, that helps to encourage people to understand and acknowledge when someone is struggling, when someone is feeling isolated, and make it okay to have those conversations. Anything we can do to make that safe space and to acknowledge that this is a very common experience for people. And so a part of that happens with really encouraging integration in our healthcare systems. It is very common for people when they are experiencing some behavioral health problem that they are actually going to their medical provider as their first point of contact. And so making sure that whichever door they go into, whether it's through the medical door, whether it's through their oral health and dental door, that all providers are skilled and knowledgeable enough to be able to recognize that this person is struggling and they could really use some additional help and support. And that they have the skills to be able to normalize that experience and make it okay for people to reach out for help and even just to do a warm handoff to get them connected to the help and support that they need. So anything that is really in the vein of integration, I think, would be very helpful in identifying and addressing and combating issues related to loneliness.
Absolutely. And so are we seeing connections between loneliness and isolation and suicide prevention work in our state?
When people feel alone, when they feel like their struggles are all their own and no one can understand or relate to what they are experiencing, that can really get people down. And so being able to connect with someone or to have someone reach out and say, hey, you know, this unfortunately can be a common experience to feel lonely, to feel isolated, to feel down. And there are ways to address that. There are lots of resources out there to help you.
Thank you. We need to head into a short break, but there is much more to discuss. You are listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. This is a pre-recorded show, so you won't be able to call in or share your questions, but we are glad you are listening. After this short break, we will dive into what loneliness is and how we can recognize it in ourselves and in others.
I'm Shelby Herbert, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media and KUAC, where I work in Fairbanks, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Haines, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your guest host, Dr. Monique Andrews. Joining us today is Leah Van Kirk with the State Department of Health and Dr. Ziamara Owens with Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, or ANTHC. Today, we're talking about loneliness in Alaska. This is a pre-recorded show, so you won't be able to call in or share your question, but thank you for listening. Now, I'd like to talk a bit about how we can recognize our own feelings of loneliness and isolation, as well as what that might look like in others. As we are moving from summer to fall to winter, we may need to think about how to prepare to stay connected during those long, cold, dark months. What does connection look like to you, Dr. Owens? Not just in a professional healthcare perspective, but to you personally.
Yeah, connection for me can look different ways, and sometimes it does depend on the season. Connection for me really is speaking to my ability to connect with my family, with my friends, with my colleagues. I'm very fortunate to work with some really wonderful people. And similar to how you had asked the question, it isn't just about connecting with colleagues about work-related things. It's really about seeing people as whole people and knowing that while we all come together with our certain expertise, we also have all these other hats and all these other areas of life that we have to find balance with. And we can't always separate those things. So connection often looks like being able to see each other as whole people. It also, again, depending on the season, it will look differently, but it means connection with my environment. Connection with being either outside or just being able to connect with the people and the things around me, with my community, and just being present with that. So in the winter time, especially when it's dark and it's cold and we have a lot of snow that's trying to keep us inside, trying to be really thoughtful, those are the times when we have to be especially thoughtful about how we are engaging with others and connecting with our world around us. And you have to be more intentional, make sure you have the right gear, that you know you can get outside and be more active. To me, that's what connection looks like.
Yes. Leah, how about you? What does connection mean to you personally?
Thank you. When I think about connection, I think about warmth. I think about trust. I think about the reciprocal nature of relationships supporting connection, and I think it promotes this feeling of like sense of belonging. And you know, I want to talk about, for instance, what that means in a family, right? When you take the time to spend with focus, listening to your child tell you about their day, that demonstrates care. It helps you feel connected to what the other person might be experiencing, and they feel cared about by you. And that's what I mean by that reciprocal piece. I think reciprocation is a part of connection. I also think that there's different ways you can feel connected. You can feel connected in your family relationships, but you can also feel connected to your community. And I think sometimes in larger communities, that's really hard. And I'll never forget my son as a senior in high school making a comment to me. He had just received notice that he received a scholarship for college. And he said to me, "Mom, I never knew my community cared about me."
Wow.
I never knew my community wanted to support me like this. And so I think that was really meaningful to him, and I think eye-opening too, what connection can mean even at a community level, and that sense of belonging, helping build your confidence. And I definitely, in Alaska, when I think about connection, I think about last weekend when I was out on the water and no one was with me. But the connection to the water beneath me, the mountains around me, and the sense of calm that I felt is also a part of connection, and that helps build up your resilience, your ability to deal with the stressors in life and the day-to-day hardships that we might face. So I think connection, you know, can mean different things to different people, but it's I'm not alone, and now I'm building myself and my stores up to be able to be healthy.
Yeah, and Alaska has so many beautiful landscapes and opportunities to connect. So what makes loneliness in Alaska different from other places, Leah?
You know, I think in Southeast Alaska, I can certainly tell you that we have a lot of rain. And sometimes that rain keeps me inside and keeps me from going out and paying a visit to a friend or going on a hike or doing those things that help build those social connections. And I think that can lead to higher degrees or feelings of loneliness without even realizing it. We're just like, it's rainy out. And then you feel dreary inside. And so I think our weather sometimes can contribute to that. In other areas of Alaska where it's colder outside, you know, that might inhibit you from, you know, interacting the same way that you might during the summer months. I know May and June is sunny and beautiful and everyone is outside and everyone is in the neighborhood and you're talking to your neighbors and you're riding bikes and you're throwing your ball for your dog and talking about what you're going to do this weekend. I also think geography in Alaska is hard. It's more difficult to get in your car and drive to the next community or visit loved ones who might live somewhere else. And, you know, I think geography plays a role in building connections and maintaining connections. I think in Alaska, it's also challenging sometimes to get the services and supports you need. And so, you know, that's an important part of the systems that we're building, is to make sure that services are accessible to people so that they can use them when they need them to help combat loneliness. And, you know, that's why one of our arcs of effort is strengthening the behavioral health system. And that focuses on that full continuum. So prevention and early intervention. And that doesn't look like a service. That looks like building protective factors, building connectedness for youth within communities. And so I know that was a long answer, but
No, thank you. In your experience, Dr. Owens, what are some of the quieter or maybe softer everyday signs that someone might be struggling with disconnection?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excuse me. So that can look lots of different ways, right? Whether it's disconnection from the people around you, feeling disconnected when you are at work and it just, your brain is kind of not working the way that you want it to. I think a lot of times some of the clues that someone might be becoming unwell or feeling really lonely or isolated, it has to do with that internal dialogue. And what are the messages that you are saying to yourself? How are you connecting to the world around you? And also looking at your routine. Are there things that you used to do that would make you really happy and now you're not doing those things so much, or you're not finding the same kind of joy or pleasure in doing those things? Sometimes it can show up in a physical way where our body just feels more sluggish and we have a little less energy to do the things that we want to do. Maybe we are notably more snappy or a little more irritated or irritable when we are interacting with our friends or our family, or we just have a little less patience. There are lots of different clues that can show up for a person, but really it's about being able to recognize those things and put words to them. Sometimes getting people in the habit of being able to do self-reflective kinds of practices and find a way to get back to the place where they're feeling a little bit more aligned in their own body and also in how they are relating to their environment and the people around them.
Yes. How do we keep people from normalizing isolation, from saying things like, well, that's just life out here, or that's just Alaska? Dr. Owens, and then let's hear from Leah.
You know, Alaska is really unique in so many ways. And as we've talked about throughout the day today, geography innately does put a division between people. It puts space between people, and it makes it difficult for people to connect in the same way that you might be able to when you're in the lower 48 or on a road system. And so I think being able to acknowledge that and to find creative ways of reconnecting. And that can look lots of different ways. But, you know, sometimes that's whether it's electronically, you know, whether we're doing FaceTime or whether we are, you know, sending an email or, you know, a phone call, finding ways to reconnect and to just connect with people. I think we might have to be a little bit more creative up here in Alaska, but it is doable. And sometimes it's really just being present. Even if you don't say anything, just being able to share space with someone can be really impactful, whether that is just getting out of your house and going to the grocery store. You're bound to cross paths with someone. Even just having that quick little encounter can be really helpful for people. Or it can be something more thoughtful and intentional where you are able to put words to your needs and express to people how you're feeling and make connection from there.
Yeah, thank you. Leah, your thoughts on how do we keep people from normalizing isolation?
Sure. I think one important thing that I have seen in youth and young adults and even adults as we have moved out of the pandemic is having to relearn those social skills that we felt comfortable in before. And maybe not everybody did. But I think, you know, the importance of thinking about teaching children those social skills, right? Building friendships, how to have healthy relationships, how to invite a friend over to play if you want to get to know them more. Ways to invest in conversations with each other. So, you know, some of the things that we do with our children as they have, you know, I think looked at the landscape of how do I build friendships, or even as they got older, I'm interested in getting to know someone better, is strategizing with them about what kinds of questions can I ask a person to help to get to know them better, and helping them develop that ahead of time. And so kind of decreasing those feelings of anxiety or awkwardness in social situations, I think can help people approach them more confidently to help them be more successful in how they engage in social relationships. And I know that seems, you know, very basic, but, you know, as we spend more time on our phones or using digital media, which isn't all bad, right? We have connection through using our devices too. But sometimes youth, as they're growing up, they are spending less time interacting face-to-face. And so they need that support and structured support, really, to help them learn, you know, how do I communicate to this person that I'm interested in doing something with them? You know, and also, even more importantly, how do I problem solve when I'm having a disagreement with my friend? How do I communicate that I don't like something that they might be doing, but still maintain the friendship? Because we get better at those things as we practice. And so, you know, I think I'm talking a lot about youth, but that can apply to adults in the workplace too. How do we support connection at work, and how do we move through conflict? That takes focus and practice and sometimes mentorship. And mentorship can be a place, you know, that supports connection as well.
Absolutely. And circling back to something that you said, Dr. Owens, earlier, that sometimes stigma gets in the way of people reaching out. What kinds of stigma are barriers to someone seeking services?
Great question. You know, I think sometimes when it comes to talking about feelings, it can make people uncomfortable. And or when you observe someone having the full range of emotions, people can feel really uncomfortable with that. And so it makes you either not want to express those things. And on the flip side, it can make people not want to support someone who might be going through a hard time. And those can be barriers to someone reaching out for help. I also think that when people are kind of in the throes of whatever emotional or psychological or behavioral health concern that they are experiencing, they feel like they're the only one who has experienced that, or they feel like people will judge them for that experience. And so it makes them not want to reach out for help. It's much easier to talk about, you know, I've, you know, got a broken arm, or I, you know, my nose is dry and I get bloody noses. I'm like, how can I fix that? And it's harder to say, you know, I've noticed that I've been really down lately, or that I've been having these thoughts of hurting myself. Those are much more difficult conversations to have with people. And for someone on the receiving end, it can be really difficult to sometimes to hear those words and to, you know, of course, we don't want people to be thinking in that way. And so how do we make it a safe space for people when they are feeling that way to be able to say that and to get them connected to the help that they want? And I also think, again, kind of back to the conversation about integration and just being able to see people as whole people, if we can see that all of these things are interconnected, it isn't that someone experiences a behavioral health concern or loneliness in isolation from other physical health conditions. We need to be able to see people as whole people and address them and have interventions that are addressing them from a holistic perspective, which includes them as individuals, but also them as a part of a system, as a part of a family system, as a part of a community. And I think if we can do that a little bit more and really encourage the setting of safe space and normalizing that these are natural experiences that people have, and there's a lot of resources and support out there, and it can be treated. And recovery can look different for lots of different people, but it is possible. And so to plant that seed and give people hope, I think that is where we can start to really address issues related to stigma.
Thank you. It's time for our last break. This is a pre-recorded show, so you won't be able to call in or share your question, but we are glad you are listening. We'll continue our discussion of loneliness in Alaska after the break. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media.
The PFD application is open. Just a small amount of your PFD will help share local news and stories about Alaskans with Alaskans across this great state when you choose Alaska Public Media through Pick, Click, Give.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your guest host, Dr. Monique Andrews, an assistant professor of psychology at Alaska Pacific University and therapist. Joining us today is Dr. Ziamara Owens, the director of behavioral health training at ANTHC, and Leah Van Kirk, the healthcare policy advisor at the State Department of Health. Today we're talking about loneliness in Alaska. This is a pre-recorded show, so you won't be able to call in or share your question, but we are glad you're listening. Now, before the break, we were talking a little bit about stigma. Leah, would you share with us what are some of the stigmas that prevent people from seeking help or admitting they are lonely?
Sure, thank you, Dr. Andrews. You know, I think that oftentimes when we're experiencing distress or stress in our life, we think, When we can't handle it, when we can't get through it, then we think we're just not strong enough, or we just don't have the skills, or, you know, or. And there's so many reasons that we don't reach out for help. Sometimes it's embarrassment, and or, you know, I should be able to get through this. I'm just going to give it time. Sometimes we think, you know, this is normal and I just need to buck up and be strong and get through it and handle it. Sometimes there's expectations put on us, you know, by our communities or our family members or our perceived expectations of how we should be able to function. But I think what's important about making sure that people get the support that they need is recognizing that stigma is a barrier and breaking through that. And so then, you know, the question is, well, how do we break through that stigma to reach, you know, individual people, you know, to that point where they're going to reach out or, you know, talk to a trusted friend, talk to a crisis contact center, reach out and engage in services, spend more time outside to promote lower levels of stress in their lives, right? What can we do to help reduce the stigma of doing what might be healthy and to help mitigate those stressors? And part of that comes through promoting healthy messaging about topics such as mental health, prevention of substance misuse and suicide, and also listening to people who have lived experiences of getting through tough times. I think offering hope and communicating that people get through this, you can do it, there is hope for recovery, is really powerful and really important. And I want to share two experiences in my life that were so meaningful and insightful. And that is, one, our youth are so good at breaking down the stigma of reaching out for help related to their mental health. And there was a time several years ago where I had a youth panel in a presentation, and it was about social media, and it was about how they support their friends if they know a friend in trouble. And one of the youth said, it makes me get goosebumps, honestly, because they're so brave. So this girl, I think she was about 16, said, "I don't mind reaching out for help when I know my friend is in trouble, even though it might mean she won't be my friend anymore, because I want to see her tomorrow." Mm-hmm. And that also represented, and made my heart hurt a little bit, that also represented that youth really are seeing friends die by suicide. And our youth really do need to be armed with the skills to know what to do when they hear about friends who are struggling. And it also showed how brave they are, that they are willing to say, they might not like me tomorrow, but I want to see them tomorrow. And so I think, you know, hearing messages from our youth who are so brave to encourage us to break down that stigma is important. And then the other story I wanted to share was I went to a national conference, and there was a national well-renowned speaker who was on stage, you know, the key plenary, and he was going to teach us about suicide prevention and the impacts of depression. And he started by saying, "I am a survivor. I struggle with depression. I have attempted suicide. And I am living. And I am fighting this every day. And you can. We can." And I think on a national platform in front of so many people, being so vulnerable to share his story, aside from his you know, his PhD or his research or anything, but me as a person, as a successful person in this world, have also struggled. and I'm making it through every day, and you can too, was really powerful. And so when I think about breaking down stigma, I think those things come to mind and important in how we approach stigma today.
Mm-hmm. Powerful stories of prevention. On that same note, how does climate, dark winters, dangerous travel, long distance, how does that impact the way we as practitioners prevent suicide here in Alaska? Dr. Owens.
Sure, I'll take a go at that. Being where we are geographically and just in location on the globe and our relationship to the sun means that there are certain months of the year where we just don't have access to the sun as other people do. And that really does actually affect the chemistry of our bodies. And so a lot of times people are like, you know, wintertime hits and they're like, gosh, why am I feeling this way? Why am I feeling more sluggish? Or why am I feeling more down? And similar to what Leah has been describing, like you kind of feel like you have ownership in that and like there's something that you have done to change that. But it's our body that's doing it. And we don't always have control over those things. And there are naturally chemicals in our body and in our brain that are affected by the absence of the sun. And so those are things to be aware of and to know that sometimes that's out of our control when we are affected, but we do have control over going over and seeing a practitioner or provider to help us to address that. There are medications that can be really helpful, but also doing things like just being active can help to produce those chemicals and hormones that we need in our body to feel well. I would also say that again, because of where we are located and sometimes our extreme weather and geography that we have, it can make us feel just naturally isolated. And the inability to get out of our community when we want to or go travel or go to a place where it's sunny and hot where there might be a beach, that the inability to do that can also have an impact on us. And I think being able to recognize that, sometimes being able to plan for it can be really helpful. Sometimes, you know, we've got the term of snowbirds, you know, where individuals in the wintertime, they make an intention of going someplace where it's sunny and hot so they can get that rejuvenation that naturally comes along with that. And I also think that being able to plan activities with family, knowing that there's just going to be some kind of fluctuation that comes with our seasons, and knowing when you can look forward to the change in the seasons. I know up in Utqiagvik at the top of Alaska, they have a community celebration when they have, after having weeks and months of literally not seeing the sun, and all of a sudden it's back. And that is something to celebrate. Not only as a community, but also because we know what that means. It's a change in season, and there are good things to come. And I think a lot of times it's kind of like being able to anticipate that can give people hope as well, knowing that the darkness will end and there is more to come on the other side of that.
Yeah, and if someone listening feels completely alone, what's the first step towards reconnecting? Leah, any thoughts?
Yeah, a lot of thoughts. You know, I think, you know, there are times when we do feel alone and we might need different things, right? We might need to reach out to some of our natural supports, right? So our friendships or our families. And oftentimes they can provide, you know, the emotional support that we need. We also may reach out to a mentor. We might reach out to our faith community or our tribal community or an elder. And then there's also other supports like our 988 Crisis Contact Center or behavioral health providers in the community. And so I think, you know, knowing your resources and understanding what might be the best kind of support with the struggle that you're experiencing. I also think sometimes when you're struggling with maybe a particular concern, talking with other people who have experienced that also and hearing, you know, their stories and ways that they have coped or gotten through those times can be extremely helpful. And so I think, you know, that support can come through our natural supports within our families and communities and also through services that can be provided that are available to people.
And shifting our gears just a little bit, what kinds of small, regular habits can help rebuild a sense of connection? Dr. Owens?
Yeah. So again, you know, when we're talking about connection, we can be talking about connection of the individual and just feeling connected within themselves. And then, of course, being connected with those that are around them. And so I think sometimes when people are really struggling or when they're feeling really down or lonely, it can be difficult to just get out of bed. And so being able to do just daily routine of just like, get out of bed, you know, eat something. Do the things that your body just naturally needs and that will naturally drink water, you know, do things that will naturally help to help your body and your mind to be well. Find things that make you happy, absolutely, that make you to feel well. And that can be, again, an individual activity. It doesn't necessarily have to be with someone else, but it could be getting out into nature. Creating things, you know, there's this mind-body connection, and a lot of times when we are creating things with our hands, mm-hmm. there's a lot of power that can come in that. And so just doing something, oftentimes I encourage people to do something that gets you out of your head. Our brain is a very, very powerful organ, and sometimes the thoughts that come along with it, we feel like we have to believe them. And I really work with people to understand that you don't have to believe every thought that you have. And sometimes we have to tell our brain who's in charge. And so being able to do something, again, that just helps to reconnect you with yourself as an individual, but also there's some power in being in shared space with people. And that doesn't mean that, you know, sometimes sharing your emotions is not a natural thing for people. It's not a comfortable thing for people, and that's okay. You don't always have to talk about those things up front, but just to be in the presence of someone else can be really healing. And so, as I mentioned before, I mean, it could just be a typical thing of going to the grocery store, just getting out of your house and just crossing paths with someone, just, you know, go to a basketball game and just watch other people. There can be a lot of health and healing that happens just innately in being in the same space as other people.
Mm-hmm. Some of what you shared sounds like low cost, low risk efforts in remaining connected. What are some last tips from our guests on reconnecting, connecting, and staying connected? Leah, would you share?
Sure. I think cultivating values of kindness, of respect, service, and commitment to one another helps build connectedness. And I think, you know, the genuine investment in our relationships is important. You know, I don't know how many times, you know, over the years I've heard, you know, while you're trying to cook dinner and maybe do the dishes, children say, "Mom, look, Mom, you're not listening." And so I think about the purposefulness of giving your full attention to people. Mm-hmm. Helps build connectedness. That means, you know, maybe setting healthy habits, like we're not bringing our phones to the dinner table because we're going to engage with each other. If somebody asks you a question, making sure that you're not holding your phone at the same time as answering them. You know, and I think, you know, that builds on all the things that Dr. Owens was talking about, and that is recognizing connectedness within ourselves and that mind-body connection as well, getting out of our heads, and sometimes even practicing when we feel nervous are all ways to build our skills and our ability to be connected within ourselves, our families, and our communities.
Dr. Owens, any last tips on reconnecting, connecting, and staying connected?
Absolutely. There are lots of opportunities on a daily basis to find ways to connect. And I second everything that Leah had identified as, you know, just daily practices that can be really helpful, and just being intentional. And also, you know, taking some time to consider different ways of being and knowing and relating to people. Maybe the practices that we've done in the past are not working for us anymore. And so taking an opportunity to expand and look for new ways.
Our thanks to our guests, Dr. Ziermaar Owens and Leah Van Kirk. Just a reminder of some resources for your community and around the state. 988 is for anyone having mental health struggles. Thanks to our audio engineer, Chris Hyde, and our producers, Rachel Cassandra and Madeline Rose. You can find more information on this and previous programs on our website at alaskapublic.org. Let us know your thoughts or suggestions by emailing us at line1@alaskapublic.org. This has been Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your guest host, Dr. Monique Andrews. Thank you.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.